welcome back for another fabulous episode. And we have found that our listeners have really enjoyed the principle of unity in our principle series. So today we're going to have a look at the principle of balance.
That sounds great, Fleur. But I also would like to ask our listeners, we love what we're doing, but we'd also love it if you showed us a bit of love. We've instigated a new thing on our Instagram and Spotify. And
Spotify, the bottom of every episode.
The bottom of every episode. You can buy us a coffee. And we would love to have a coffee with you, effectively. This makes up for the fact that we can't have a coffee while we're talking.
That's right.
So buy us a coffee. You'll find it on our Instagram and Spotify at the bottom. So on to the principle of balance, Fleur. Let's talk about why is balance so important in a garden?
Well, it's one of those key principles. You know, we established that in our principles series. But I think it deserves its own episode because it's a little less obvious to identify when something just isn't right. And so, you know, in preparing for this episode today, we were sort of thinking it does cross over into other areas, which is why it doesn't stand alone. And so I think we really need to unpack that today to help our listeners say, why is my garden not working or why is it looking fabulous?
Because I almost think this is a principle that it's easier to know when you don't have it because things don't feel right. You know, if you're saying that my garden's too messy or rigid or boring, chances are you haven't got the balance right. And I think if you do have it right, your space will feel harmonious and comfortable and stable as well. And it will still have enough interest and variety to keep, you know, things going. It won't be monotonous and boring.
Yeah. So, or empty.
Yeah, that's right. Empty also, well, which to me is a bit of monotony and boring if it's an empty garden. But really, it's something that is naturally pleasing to the eye and you get a sense of everything's right.
Just right. That's
just right.
Right.
It's the vibe.
So, you know,
of the thing.
I think a lot of people, when you say balance, they think of symmetry. So is balance about symmetry?
So I don't think balance is about symmetry. And we'll go more into symmetry because it's obviously a really critical part of what is balance. And it's the thing we all think about, you know, when we think about balance. But the way to think about balance, and this is how I, you know, really trying to break this down, it's a bit like life. So everything in life needs to be balanced, you know, what you eat, the amount of exercise, your sleep. Too much of anything is not good. And it's the same in a garden. So really, when I was trying to break this down, that kind of principle that underpins all of this is nothing should overpower anything else in the garden and then you have balance.
So everything in moderation?
Oh, kind of. yeah. Right. That's another way of looking at it. So not one element in your garden where it's colour or accessories or your hardscape or the flow or your lines, nothing should overpower anything else and then it will be in balance. Right. So it's that simple.
Yeah. So we've got quite a lot to talk about. And I also like to think of balance when I'm sort of putting together a design in a four dimensions. So I like to consider the ground plane, so yep. Allow sort of what's happening on the surface. I like to consider the vertical plane, so anything that's high, that could be, you know, trees and shrubs as well as structures. Also points, like focal points or points in the space, because that's a third dimension. And then time, the seasonal change, and also time not just in terms of leaves falling off or leaves changing colour, but plants growing.
Yes.
So what you
evolution.
First put in, yeah, that, you know, small little tree sapling that you put in.
From now, little things, big things grow.
Yeah. You heard it from her herself.
So I think if we sort of move on to the what you actually, and we've started to already talk about this, but the what constitutes balance, the thing that I also looked up, because I like my definitions, I looked up what is the design definition for balance? Because obviously it's a design principle, so it applies as much to art that hangs in a gallery, to graphic designers, to landscapes. And the actual definition of balance is the distribution of the visual weight of objects, colours, texture and space in a composition.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, because yes. It does give you a very crisp outline of this is what we're aiming to achieve, is this distribution of the visual weight of objects.
Yeah. I'm with that because I often try and describe to a client about imaginary weight. I say, think of that glass house, you can see through it, or the arbor, you can see through it, but it actually has a footprint on the ground. It is an imaginary weight. So we need to balance that with something of equal weighting on the other side.
That's right. And so in the garden, the terms you might hear, I guess, associated with balance, and that we'll talk about today, is the use of masses or void and voids, which is so the things that are actual objects versus the open space, symmetry and asymmetry, colour, texture, materials, plantings, foliage, seasonality, so that's all part of your plantings, open and closed areas, sun and shade. All of them contribute to balance.
I'm Fleur, and I'm joined by my co-host and longtime friend, Sachi. We're second career landscape designers and bring our life experience and a fresh perspective to designing gardens.
And I'm Sachi, and you're listening to the On Garden Design podcast, where we chat about what makes a garden great, and we try to inspire and make designing accessible to anyone interested in gardens.
Okay, so now we've had a think about why we need balance and what constitutes balance. Let's sort of unpack that a little bit more. So we've got our definition. So what makes a garden unbalanced? Because that's often the easiest way to look at this. So what are the signs, such, when you look at a garden and you feel it's unbalanced, what are you seeing in practical terms?
Well, I think in practical terms, you're often seeing something that dominates. Like you might walk into a garden and go, wow, there's a lot of paving. Or, I'm struggling to see where I can sit down because there's just lots of garden and there's no definition almost in the garden. You must have some good examples, I'm sure, Fleur, because you asked me that question.
Well, I think that sometimes you get competing elements.
Yes.
And I want to talk a bit more about shape, so we'll go into that in the how. But if you've got a garden that you wanted to create in an organic way and you've got sweeping curves and organic shaped garden beds, you know, like those islands in the stream, then having any sort of rectilinear paving and structures and layout is at odds and it doesn't feel right. So there's that that sort of jars the balance. I think you need to have shapes that work with each other. You know, I guess one of the examples, we've referred to this garden before, it's a garden Sachi and I recently visited, and it had giraffe patterning garden beds in part of the garden. As you went around the corner, it had a strong central axis and more symmetry. And it just didn't work. The whole thing was, I mean, we could say this crosses into unity, but it also felt very unbalanced as the way that it was laid out.
And I think that's the challenge with balance, is that you can confuse it with unity. Unity is really about how everything comes together so that it feels it has that oneness and it all fits in place.
The harmony.
Yeah, the harmony. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Balance contributes to harmony by making sure that no one thing overpowers anything else. And the other example I thought of when you were just talking about, you know, when you know you don't have balance, things can often look messy because you've got too many colours or too many bright colours that might be shifting the balance too much in their favour versus others. And the other one, the converse to that, is it's boring because you've got too much monotone, or you've got too much of the same texture.
Too much lawn,
exactly. Mm. Not enough trees, for instance, or vertical interest. So I think those are some other practical examples of where balance might be missing.
Yeah. I want to keep emphasising on your point you made in the definition, which is about weighting. It's about the presence of, you know, weighted objects in the garden. You know, for example, a structure that sits out on its own, a lot of people might put like the outdoor kitchen, or something at sort of the back end of the garden, you sort of look at this big structure, or a gazebo near the pool house, like a pool house thing, and it just sits out there by itself and it's all very flat around it, and then there's this sort of pimple on the earth, which is your big mighty structure. And unless that's got some counterbalance in the landscape, it feels like the pimple on the landscape.
That's right. There's nothing else countering its weight around it, yeah, in its context.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so in that example, you need like either a clump of trees or some, you know, big boulders. Or
another building.
Or another building, that's right. Or
arbor or something that to gives help balance that.
Yeah,
sense.
That's right.
And I think it's really important, that point you made before, that remember gardens are three-dimensional. So you do need to think about the vertical. And I think it's particularly important with the principle of balance, because that vertical really draws your eye. It's the strength in the lines in a garden rather than the horizontal. So just thinking about that as well. Let's dive into the how, because this is interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
Can we start with symmetry and asymmetry? Because I think as soon as you start to look at balance, people immediately think symmetry is the way to get balance. You know, one side mirrors the other.
Yeah.
You know, if you put a fountain in that corner, you have to have a fountain in that corner. Or, you know, if your beds are this shape, they have to be the same on both sides.
Oh, the classic is having two trees you buy at the same time and they're on equally sighted parts of the garden, you know, perfectly symmetrical to the house, and then one tree thrives and the other doesn't. And it's irritating that they'll always be wrong. And really, you didn't have to do that to achieve balance. You could have a big tree on one side, and on the other side, you can have a grouping of medium height shrubs. And that can give a balance. As long as those medium height shrubs take out a kind of a wider space compared to the height of the tree on one side, then you can achieve a balance in that space.
And what you're describing is asymmetry, which can also be balanced.
And
I guess just staying on symmetry for a second, though, symmetry can be really stable and familiar, and it creates order and it feels really good. And I absolutely am a fan of symmetry, but it doesn't always work in all situations. And often it's quite good for large gardens or very narrow gardens. And I think it's also a particular element of particular garden styles. So formal gardens, for instance, are very symmetrical. And if you look even sort of more down a particular track of garden styles, like Italian Renaissance gardens are very formal, symmetrical. Mm. So, you know, it is very much about if you want that particular garden style, you go with symmetry.
Yeah, and you know, for many of our listeners, the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show was on last weekend, and many of our listeners would have been there. Many have seen pictures on, you know, Gardening Australia and other shows have done exposés on it. There's a lot of stuff online, a lot of conversation, and I was lucky enough to go. There were many amazing inspirational show gardens there, and I would say of, oh, I don't know, maybe sort of 30 gardens I'm thinking of, including the little gardens and whatnot, probably about three had a symmetrical layout. So the majority of gardens were asymmetrical but beautifully balanced.
Mm.
And so this is why I really want to emphasize that point, that balance isn't about symmetry.
This is a really useful description for people who are struggling to understand what we mean by balanced asymmetry. If you're thinking of scales which are perfectly balanced, you often think about the same weight on either scale. In asymmetry, you will have one weight on one scale, you'll have the same weight on the other scale, but comprising different little weights. So you might have one big weight on one end, and you might have three little weights adding to the same amount of weight on one end, and they are perfectly balanced still.
And so to put some meat to the bones of this example, you can have that big weight on one side of the scales is a large tree.
Yep.
And that same weight on the other side of the scales may be three small trees or medium-sized shrubs.
Yep. Or it could be a structure of some sort that balances out the weight of the tree, but doesn't have to be exactly the same size.
Mm.
So you really are thinking creatively about how you're getting that balance in your garden. And it aims to look a lot more informal and natural. And it can often be a very visually satisfying solution compared to the formality that you get with symmetry. And the other thing that is interesting, so odd numbers create a much more natural effect, even in more formal settings. So that's something else to think about when you're trying to achieve balance. So if you're using odd numbers, you will get a more natural effect. You'll get even numbers will give you a more formal effect. And so again, if you've got, you know, one tree and three bushes as your asymmetric balance, that will make it also feel a lot less formal.
And also I'm thinking about in surface finishes, say for example you have paving. One of the sort of asymmetric tricks, I guess, is you have a paved area, but you actually take out a couple of pavers and then plant that space out. And so your route kind of gets Well, it's interesting.
Organic.
Organic. Well, you know, you just have...
It's more interest.
More interest. So in one side, you might take out a group of four pavers and have a garden bed there. On the other side of the path, you might take out every second paver, so the garden bed sort of comes in and laps over the path. So you've got this sense that there are pavers that have been removed, and that's creating this balance, and there's these little garden beds put in, but they're not the same on
either
side. That's
right. But the visual weight feels the same.
Yeah.
Which goes back to that. That's how you achieve the balance.
Yeah.
So... let's move on from asymmetry and symmetry, unless you had anything else to talk about there.
No, I think I think we've kind of done that one pretty well.
I think so too. Well, you tell us if we got it right.
You know what? If you buy us a coffee, we'll know if we got that right. If it actually resonated with you and you said, actually, these girls think they know what they're talking about, then buy us a coffee.
Because it is quite an interesting concept to... explain without the help of pictures, and we will put up a couple of pictures on our Instagram site so that you can see what we mean by symmetry and asymmetry and getting the balance right. So what's the next one? Let's talk about mass and void, maybe.
Yeah, mass and void is a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to throw to you for the first bit because this is, you're all over mass and void. Right. You're just a big void. No, maybe you're just a big mass.
Well, the whole idea of mass and void is comes back to that weighting. So that imaginary weight in a garden. And this is where we want to, I mean, there's also a little bit of a crossover in this one on proportionality,
yes,
and scale. Yep. So, you know, you might think of
other principles. They are other principles,
which
yes,
will be next in our principles series. Yes. Where you have, so mass is areas that are either densely planted, or it might be a structure, or, you know, a clump of trees, or something that creates a mass or density on the landscape. A void, on the other hand, will be an open area. So it might be an open garden room. It may be a swimming pool, pond, paved area that's just open. And that creates this contrast between the two spaces, which becomes very pleasing. Now, you know, we've talked in other episodes, the one about the garden rooms, about how to get that balance of mass and void in a scientific or mathematical sense. So this one, we're not going to go into that, but we'll just want to really draw your attention to what is open space and how it can be in a pleasing composition with closed space. And how we put that together.
And in fact, I'd like to broaden that almost, because I think the other thing that it's not even enclosure and openness, but even things like shade and sun can create a sense of mass and void. Because obviously darker areas will always recede and brighter areas stand out more. So you do need to be thinking about, if you've got really big open sunny spots in your garden, if you've got too much of that, the garden can feel unbalanced as well. Mm. So, you know, this mass and void, it's a whole lot of things, and you can't just look at it in terms of, I guess, things. It can be, I don't know, the perception of things, like shade gives you, which makes things feel like they're more enclosed and dark, and, you know, it's almost a colour in itself.
So how as a designer do you design for mass and void when you're using deciduous plants?
That's a really good point. And I guess that also goes to seasonality, because at some times in your seasonal cycle, you'll also have a lot more void than you originally had when you were planting.
Which is why a lot of us walk around our winter gardens scratching our heads going, oh, it looks so empty.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. But it goes to how important getting some, you know, evergreen and other structures in your garden are, so that at least you've got some sense of balance, particularly in those winter months where things are not looking, you know, lush and full like they normally do, creating that mass that we were talking about in the landscape.
I often think that starting with designing your winter garden is the best place to start.
Yes.
Because if you get your winter garden right, then your summer garden is going to be fine.
Unless it just looks chaotic because it's over the top because you've designed for winter. I mean, that's a risk, isn't it?
Well, I think the things that hold your garden together in winter are going to be those structural plantings and structures.
Yes.
That are always representing mass. The voids will be a little lighter in winter, but in summer those voids often get filled quite a lot with perennials.
That's what I'm saying. Because if you were designing just on a winter garden, you might fill so much of your, trying to deal with the balance element, you might put too many of the evergreens and you never actually get enough of the balance in there.
Well, that's where we need to think about where those empty spaces will be, if you want to plant them out or just have grass.
That's right. Or it's something ephemeral, you know, that does come up every now and then. But quite apart from the seasonality.
Right, Mass and Void, we're still on that, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
So I think this is a good opportunity to leverage off one of the gardens from the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show last week.
She just wants to show off that she got there. That's what it is.
Well, I know a lot of our listeners have probably been there, and, you know, and just show gardens are just so fantastic. And also because they're readily available that, you know, listeners can
look at these on the website. Yeah.
Well, there's this one garden I just want to refer to when we're talking about Mass and Void, and it was by Christian Jenkins. And the garden was called Reflection. Now, I thought it was a particularly great example of balancing mass and void. So he used some quite heavy structures. There's a kind of a pavilion, actually, that's stone clad, and it's got a solid roof, and it has a hanging fireplace. It's, you know, a very nice, cozy spot. But it's a heavy footprint on the ground. And it was very well balanced in the landscape by the use of very heavy set trees. You know, trees that I think they're the brachychiton. They had the very big swollen, almost like a boab.
Mm.
They've got the swollen trunks and they're heavy and they're big. And that helped that the pavilion sink into the landscape. And then next to the pavilion also were some very mature grass trees. So that height helped balance out the height of the pavilion. Now, that's the mass side of the whole, that half of the composition. The other half, to really lighten up the void, there was a very large swimming pool or pond that sort of wrapped around the structure with some nice paving that sort of worked its way through. And the contrast, textural contrast of the reflecting light on the water as well as the softness of water against the hard stone was really pleasing. So it was just a great example of how to incorporate mass and void.
And we'll see if we can't put a picture of that one up on the Definitely. Or at least the reference so Definitely. That you know exactly what it is. And I was just thinking about how for residential gardeners and who are thinking about their gardens, some of the things that often don't work where mass and void are clearly out of balance. Often you'll have things like a plant bed that's too small for its surroundings. So you might have a plant bed in a lawn, and that's what you often see. It just isn't the right balance for the lawn. It's too small. And there's too
very
much
popular
lawn.
In the 1960s.
Absolutely, absolutely. Similarly, with a hardscape, you've got a little rim of, you know, garden bed, and then you've got this massive hardscape, and the balance isn't right. And that's particularly jarring because you have too much hard stuff and not enough soft stuff, as well as you just don't have a good balance between your paving and your planting if it's a garden. So those are two that I think we see a lot.
Yeah.
And the other thing is very flat beds and lawn areas where you don't have any vertical height, which is bringing balance into, because you've got a house, you've got a structure that sticks out. And I'm actually doing a design at the moment where it's a really cool retro 70s architectural piece, but the garden around it's completely flat and it's a big two-story house. So it looks like a pimple in a desert. So it really needs some vertical height to bring balance even to the architecture.
Canary Island palm trees.
I know. Unfortunately, she likes cottage gardens.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll need
that's a challenge.
Yeah, that is a challenge.
That's my
challenge.
In fact,
well, here's another example. Here's what you could use, although it's a bit retro. It's Through the Looking Glass by Emmeline Bowman. This is a great example of what you're talking about. So this is another show garden, and it has in it an iconic Aussie rural windmill. So, you know, it's tall, it's pointy, and so it has a certain shape. So
pyramidal.
Yeah, and so that sort of this makes all the other structures feel a bit small. But in order to – so if that would just had a ground plane planting, it would have just been too much of a focal point and dominating everything in moderation, remember?
That's right. Yep. Nothing to overpower.
That's right. And so what she did particularly well then is she's included a rustic metal arbor. Both of these, the windmill and the arbor, are both light metal structures. The windmill's the tall, thin pyramid, and the metal arbor is shorter, wider, and curved. So then, you know, it's not symmetrical. They're not the same materials. They're not the same form, but they counterbalance each other in that landscape beautifully.
In a nice asymmetric way as well.
Bingo.
Just to wrap that all up. And I think the last thing I want to say on mass and void is think also outside your garden because you will be borrowing elements of the context potentially that are also, I guess, affecting the balance in your garden.
So you're talking borrowed landscape?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
So street poles?
Yeah, it could be buildings. If you're in a small townhouse, you might have big vertical buildings next to you that you need to be thinking about how you're going to balance that as well in your garden. And for me in my garden, I've got a massive tree from my neighbour, which provides a huge amount of vertical interest. So how do I balance and ground some of that as well? So be thinking about what's around you, not just in your garden, to really achieve that balance where you've got that harmony and nothing's overpowering.
Well, I think I might have achieved that harmony by painting into my mural the neighbour's tree.
Yes.
That massive big grevillea silky oak. So if anybody ever cuts that down...
That's right. Your balance is shot.
My balance is gone.
That's right. So what else might we think about in terms of the how around balance?
You know, I think we should talk a bit about plantings.
Yes. Yes, we should.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is where we look at plantings. Like one group of plants or plant must be a commensurate mass or weighting with another group. So and the different groups of plants should relate to each other in not just in terms of the mass, but also in scale and number. So when we think about a mass of group of plants, both vertical and horizontal, I guess, and, you know, we could talk about something like a tall tree with a low ground cover might offset nicely a group of shrubs, that sort of thing. So once again, we're not talking about symmetry, but we're talking about weighting in the landscape.
And if I can add to that, just to bring some richness of texture into the conversation.
Oh, I like that.
Also things like your texture. So if you have lots of strappy plants, you probably want to balance them with some leafy big foliage or, you know, very fine foliage. You might have lots of plum or burgundy coloured foliage, which you want to balance with, you know, some greens or some creams or something else there.
You just want me to talk about that garden, don't you?
I do. Go for it.
Ellen Freeman, oh my goodness, my new favourite designer. Her garden called Eclipse at the garden show was exactly that. It was this, but it was so unique because it actually concentrated textures and colours. It really used colours into different areas of the garden. We're talking about plants here. So she had half of the garden was heavily, densely planted in all shades of burgundy, and the other half of the garden was densely planted in shades of green grey. And it was like you have different mood swings looking at one half the garden to the other half, because there was a completely different sensory stimulus from the lighter shade, which is almost like that play on light bouncing back at you with the green greys. And then the burgundy was almost like a nighttime thing. It had this sort of sense of a deeper mood, and the colours were just calmer in a way. And so this contrast, you know, you'd say, well, it was balanced. Yes, it was kind of symmetrical, and it was definitely layering and height, but it was really the balance came in this sort of the textures and the colour combinations. And I thought it was just beautiful.
And I think it's a really unique use of, I guess, foliage colours to demonstrate something. Mm. Not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, but something quite unique and interesting to look at from a balance perspective. Because the other thing that I wanted to just talk about a bit was that when you're using colour to achieve balance, you do need to think about how you use colour. Because light colours, as I think I mentioned earlier, they'll draw the eye more than dark colours will, which because the dark colours will recede. So, and then dark colours also look heavier. So yeah. You do need to be thinking about how you're using them, because you don't want to overuse the dark colours, because they will make your garden feel heavy and then you'll be out of balance. So, and the other thing is bright colours will also draw the eye. So again, you don't want to overuse bright hues. You know, those pops of colour should be used judiciously. And you need to have muted colours to, you know, I guess balance those sort of really vivid things that you do want to include in your garden. And these don't have to be foliage or plants or something. It could be sculpture, it could be accessories, it could be anything. But you do want to think about how you're using bright and vivid colours, and also how much of the dark colours you're using.
Yeah,
for your balance.
It's a good point. And certainly plants are one way of achieving colour.
Yeah.
And also hardscape materials is another way of bringing in colour.
And I think, sorry, I was just going to say that, like, I think because we could talk about so many things when it comes to balance. It could be, you know, the movement versus the rigidity in your garden. If you had a garden that's just full of things that sway, you might end up feeling like none of the garden's very stable. But then if you have it all in concrete, hard things, you have no movement and it might feel really rigid and formal and constrained. So again, you want balance. If you have lots of hard textures, you may want to have stepping stones where you actually interplant with, you know, plants to soften them. Get the balance right there if you do need to have lots of hardscaping.
So balancing soft and hard.
Soft and hard, yeah. That's right. But also those textures as well. So all of those things, everything you can probably put a balance lens over is what I'm getting at. And if something doesn't feel right, think about the balance and what is it that's going on there that might help you understand what doesn't feel quite right. But I think the critical thing we have to end with is that balance evolves with your garden.
Yes, because it's not ever in a point in time. It's constantly evolving and things are growing and things are being pruned and then, you know, trees get struck by lightning and fall down.
That's right. Or you've planted that thing and you read the label and it said 1 to 2 metres and now it's a 6 metre giant and you hadn't planned on that. So you need to think about, well, actually, how am I going to manage the balance in my garden now? Does it have to go or can it stay? And it would be really sad if it
had
to go.
And that's the beautiful thing about gardens is they're dynamic and they constantly present opportunities.
Finding balance is a continuous process, isn't it? Just like in life.
That's right. But I think this, you know, this has gone very fast, but, you know, really important lessons here. And I think if you can just take the, probably the key takeaway is everything in moderation. What was your
Don't let any one thing overpower.
That's it. So moderation, don't let one thing overpower. And then if
you'll
go out
balance.
To your garden, that's it, you'll have balance. So go out to your garden, I challenge you, have a good walk around and say, is there something here that's just too dominating and how can I reduce its domination?
That's
can I
right.
put something in or do I take something out?
No world domination from any one thing.
No,
it goes for everything. That's
in
basically,
weeds.
That's right, including in the garden. So if you've enjoyed this episode, follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, see the photos that we've been referring to, and we will talk to you next time. See you later.
Bye for now.
Bye.